Simple. If you listen to the news on this or any other outlet on a regular basis, there are reasons to get a bit discouraged about the world and its management by humans. Even if we were all getting along famously in politics and international relations, there's the world itself and the news of warmest months and polar ice losses and more. Our guest this hour offers ideas on how to approach life on Earth today. Kate Davies is the author of the book Intrinsic Hope, Living Courageously in Troubled Times. Kate Davies teaches environmental studies and sustainability. Decades ago, Kate set up the Environmental Protection Office for the city of Toronto, the big one in Canada. She is now an associate professor at the University of Washington, a senior fellow at the Whidbey Institute, and emeritus faculty at Antioch University. Thank you so much for joining us today, Kate Davies.
Well, thank you for having me.
So given your background with the environment and sustainability, it sounds like you've really been dealing with issues of can we save the Earth through your career?
You know, that's really true. Over the last 40-odd years, I think I've worked on most of the big environmental issues and their social consequences, everything from climate change to toxic chemicals to pollution to land use and environmental justice. And, over that time and dealing with the increasing amount of scientific information that's being kind of gloomy, I really began to feel hopeless and to really wonder how I could stay doing this work and stay positive and engaged. And so I decided I really needed to understand hope a little bit better, and that's really the basis of this book.
So I was going to ask if you were running across people who were discouraged by the prospects for the planet, but you didn't have to ask them because you were feeling it yourself.
Right, and I did ask people as well. I've done some fairly unscientific surveys, just asking my friends and colleagues and my family about what are their thoughts about the future? What do they think about the state of the world? And do they have hope for the future? And I found that a lot of folks really didn't. And then there's also various more scientific surveys that have been done that are showing that people are increasingly sad, feeling increasingly sad and hopeless about the state of the world and what is likely to happen in the future, what may happen.
You refer to this in the book, Kate, as a global eco-social crisis. The eco part certainly makes sense, but as eco-social is something new. Would you unpack that term for us?
Sure, yeah. So it's a term that we're beginning to see and use more and more today. And really what it recognizes is that we have an ecological crisis, but that ecological crisis has profound social impacts as well that you can't really separate them very much. So, for example, I lived in Canada for many years and was living in Canada when the cod fishery collapsed off the Atlantic coast around Newfoundland back in the 1990s, and that was a huge ecological crisis, but it was an even worse social crisis because it just decimated the fishing communities all up and down that coastline who had depended on the cod fishery, the Atlantic cod fishery, for centuries. And suddenly, literally almost overnight, there were no cod, and it led to a huge mass migration out of Newfoundland. Those villages really haven't recovered to this day from the loss of the fishery, and so it's been a huge social impact, not just an ecological impact. And we see the same thing with climate change too. I met my first climate refugees, for example, about 10 years ago, a couple who'd left Australia because they just couldn't bear the heat anymore in their home country, and that's the social impact, and we're going to see much more of those as well, I think, in the future.
So when you consider the rise of nationalism and some of the other trends that express themselves in political and social ways, do you think they're part of that whole picture?
I do, and if you look at actually many of the world's conflicts, they have their roots, or they have part of their roots at least, in conflicts, in disagreements about natural resources. Water is the big one, of course. Huge disagreements about water usage and who gets to control water. Not only countries arguing about that, but regions within countries, of course. I just think about California and water. Water
right,
rights
and Jerry Brown's water tunnels and all that. Sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
It seems like one element of the freak out, as you point out in the book, is that we do not like to talk about our fears for the future very much. It's almost like talking about death, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. I think that's so true. And it's one of the things that I really had to learn and struggle with is that, you know, often when we're afraid of something, we think, well, it's just me. You know, I'm somehow different. Nobody else feels this way. And so that means that we don't talk to each other. There's a kind of embarrassment, and so not only do we have our fears, but then we are afraid of expressing our fears. And in the book, I call this a double whammy of fear. It's just not socially acceptable to do unless you're lying on a therapist's couch somewhere. But to talk about, you know, our fears about climate change, for example, in public, it's not something you do very much, and yet the more we don't talk about it, the more our fears grow inside us when they're not expressed, and the more we feel isolated, and it kind of just goes down into a spiral from there. But if we actually talk about it and name these things, name our feelings, then we're much more likely to be able to do something about them and see that other people have similar feelings to ours as well.
I was waiting for the word isolate to show up in some form, and you didn't disappoint, but that does seem to be a constant problem for humans, doesn't it?
Yeah, we do think of ourselves as isolated human beings. You know, one of my favorite classes that I used to teach when I taught at Antioch was American cultural patterns. And I loved that because I'm a non-American. Your listeners probably know that because of my accent. But individualism and the sense that we are all separate beings is so prevalent in this culture. We don't see ourselves as being either connected in communities or as being dependent on the earth. And that, I think, is some of the problem here.
All right. So we'll talk about how to address the problem and get into some of the specifics of intrinsic hope, living courageously in troubled times. The book by Kate Davies, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll be back on the Exchange with Kate and you in a minute 15. On the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Kate Davies, who teaches environmental studies and sustainability and has been working in that field for a very long time. She set up the first environmental protection office in the city of Toronto several decades ago. Now an associate professor at the University of Washington, senior fellow at the Whidbey Institute, emeritus faculty at Antioch University. She's written a book called Intrinsic Hope, Living Courageously in Troubled Times, how we can get around the way we might be feeling about the fate of the world and its inhabitants and think in terms of deeper thoughts, better hopes for humanity in the time ahead. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. There's a foreword in the book, Kate, from Vicki Robin, who describes her struggle with cancer. And she really gives us a clue to a kind of hope that a lot of us may not simply know. Can you lay it out for us?
Sure. So what she's really talking about in the foreword is the type of hope that I'm writing about in the book. And I call it intrinsic hope. But let me start, if I may, with extrinsic hope. And after I'd been working on environmental issues for a while and was feeling kind of really hopeless about the state of the future, I decided to launch what I call a personal inquiry into hope. And my first stop was the dictionary. And if you look in the dictionary, most definitions of hope use words like expectation or anticipation or desire. So in other words, it's about hoping that certain things are going to happen, that we will achieve specific improvements in our life, that in our lives or in our situation that we'd like to see. So, for example, with Vicki, she obviously wanted to get better from her cancer. But there's a bit of a problem here because often life gives us what we don't hope for, what we don't want. I mean, fortunately, in Vicky's case, she recovered, and she's a very dear friend of mine. But often, life doesn't give us what we hope for. And when that happens, all of those feelings come up. We feel disappointment, frustration, anger, sadness, and ultimately hopelessness. So kind of that's the state that I was in my career. I'd been hoping to save the world ultimately, and as time went by, I realized that I wasn't going to do that, and I wasn't sure that, you know, that humankind was going to do that either. And so I really wanted to find a different sort of hope that would enable me to keep going. And so I went back to the dictionary, and there is a secondary, a very old-fashioned definition of hope that's usually buried in most dictionaries, and it's more about having a basic trust in life, having a faith in life, not necessarily a religious faith, although it can be, but a faith or a trust in life itself that isn't really dependent on achieving particular outcomes in the world or attaining particular results in the world. And that's what I call intrinsic hope, because it really comes from inside us rather than from outside us. And it's really, I like to think of intrinsic hope as really an attitude of mind or an outlook on life that is positive, even if we don't like what's happening, and maybe especially if we don't like what's happening. So it has a sense of just kind of accepting the way things are and doing our best anyway, despite it all, and perhaps because of it all, just keeping on going and doing the very best that we can wherever we are and whenever we can, and kind of staying out of the results, I might say it that way.
So not dependent upon the next cupcake or car or date, but something not tethered to a tangible or at least a temporal thing.
Exactly. Now, that doesn't mean that we have to give up on our aspirations at all, and I think there's a big difference here between I can aspire to do something or see some particular outcome, but I'm not attached to it. I'm not kind of, there's an emotional attachment there, and that's where the disappointment and the frustration and the hopelessness come up, when those emotional attachments aren't met, when life doesn't give us what we want. So I can aspire to see an end to climate change, but I don't expect life to conform to my wishes anytime soon, and I don't know exactly what that's going to look like. I don't know what I can see alternatives and possibilities. So intrinsic hope kind of opens everything up rather than shuts it down to when we focus on a specific goal or a specific outcome that we want to see. Does that make sense?
It really does. Kate Davies is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is the author of the book Intrinsic Hope, Living Courageously in Troubled Times. I'm glad you bring up Silent Spring in your book from 1962, because it reminds us that some of us have been through some fairly existential fears about the planet. Come to think of it, that's the same year as the Cuban Missile Crisis, same month, in fact, that people lived through in our time.
Yeah, exactly. I think we have, as a species, we do face these existential questions, and I think they're becoming very prominent in these times, particularly as the news about the environment, you know, seems to get worse and worse. And so I think there really is a hunger for hope. You know, when I go out and talk to people, and do readings from the book and so on, I really sense a deep hunger for a sense of hopefulness in these times, a way that we can still get out of bed in the morning and take joy and pleasure in life, even though we don't know what's going to happen necessarily. We don't know for sure. We don't know absolutely for sure. It looks like things aren't going too well. But we don't know. Prediction is not certainty, is what I say in the book. Another way of saying it is, and I say mention this in the book too, that the future is not inevitable, it is inventable. The future is not inevitable, it is inventable. So, you know, that's what intrinsic hope is about. It's about saying, yeah, things look bad, but we don't know for sure. And how are we going to live with that uncertainty? Well, we're not going to throw in the towel and just give up. We're going to act as if there is hope, as if things are going to be okay. We're going to keep on going no matter what. And that's what people have done throughout the centuries. So, you know, this concept of intrinsic hope really isn't anything new. but I hope I'm presenting it in a way that is relevant for these times that we're living in.
You point out, Kate, that not just that we should talk about our feelings, so don't isolate, but also name what we're feeling. And you get into a number of areas here. Economic fear is a big one in our time. People are afraid that the environmental concerns might end their jobs. As you point out, it certainly did in the case of the cod fishery in Newfoundland. But shame and guilt is an interesting topic here. Does that come from a sense that we personally have not done enough or something like that?
Yeah, you know, I can only really speak for myself, and certainly it does for me. You know, I've worked on environmental issues, as you said, for all of my career, but I live in a very comfortable house. You know, my ecological footprint, the resources that I use every year, are greater than the Earth's capacity to regenerate those resources. So a sense of guilt and shame, I think, is almost inevitable. And I know many of my colleagues and friends feel this too, that, you know, compared to most of the people in the world, we have things pretty comfortable here, or many of us do at any rate. And so there's always a sense that we should be doing more and more. And there's nothing wrong with that, but guilt can be a motivator for action, but it can also kind of be debilitating and disempowering, and that's certainly true for shame, which of course is related to guilt. It can be a very disempowering emotion and lead us to feel even more hopeless.
We were talking about how to move from feeling hopeless to feeling a kind of hope that is a lot less tethered, in fact, to things that we can see in the near future. It's what Kate Davies calls intrinsic hope. That is the title of her book, Intrinsic Hope, Living Courageously in Troubled Times. We have an email here, or actually it was a call that he just dropped off. Donovan Eureka said that humans see themselves as the center of everything, and they are not. Well, he does ultimately think the world will survive, I believe he said as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's really true. We do see ourselves as the center of everything. And the truth is that we are part of the web of life. Now we are right now the largest single influence on the planet's ecology. So there is a sense that we can make or break things as a species. So in that sense, we are pretty important on this planet because we're doing the most harm. But, you know, life will continue with or without humankind. And I'm not being fatalistic here or saying that the planet would be better off without people. I'm not saying that for a moment. But life will continue in some form or another. And for me, nature and life itself is an amazing source of hope. It's one of the reasons for hope that I offer in the book. In the second chapter, I provide a list of reasons for hope, and that life is inherently hopeful is my top reason. You know, I look outside my window and I've got a dogwood tree in full blossom right now. I've got you know, a maple tree. I can see all of these wonderful signs of life around me, the herons flying over this morning. And to me, that's incredibly hopeful, no matter what our species is doing to the planet. I think that life itself has hope.
And one of the things you also point out that we can take heart in is that we know more than ever before. So we have some tools at our disposal. So, are you among the people who think that we can fix what we broke?
I think we may be able to, but I don't think there's any. I don't think there's any guarantees. You know what I say is that it's clear that it's clear to me and to the majority of scientists that human beings caused this crisis, and so because we caused it, I think there is the possibility that we can resolve it. I don't think there are any promises or guarantees, but I think there is at least the possibility that we may be able to resolve it. And whether we take action has everything to do with that. If we think it's too late and we can't do anything, then that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And it will be too late, you know, if we just give up and think that we're doomed, then that will be our reality. But if we engage and keep trying to do our best, then I think there is at least the possibility. There is the possibility of resolving it, and that's what I'm talking about.
You say it's our responsibility to be hopeful, and you also point out again how intrinsic hope, which you're pushing here, differs from extrinsic hope. Is intrinsic hope a bit more accepting of what does happen because it is not so goal and get oriented?
Totally, yes. It is more accepting, and this is one of the habits of hope that I mentioned in the second half of the book, is that we really need to accept our situation. We really need to accept the way things are, because if we don't do that, then our actions are unlikely to be effective. And that's simply because we won't be behaving in a way that is appropriate to the scale and the magnitude of the crisis, which of course is what's happening right now. Our actions are not commensurate with the scale and magnitude of the crisis, because we're still in denial. And when I say we, I'm talking about humankind in general. I want to be clear about that.
Okay.
So this is a huge generalization that I'm making. I also just want to say one thing about results. You know, I'm saying that intrinsic hope is about not being attached to the results of our actions, but I recognize that this is. Saying that is really challenging. You know, we all want to see the results of our actions. We want to see things work. We want to see things be effective. So when I say give up on the hope of results, or at least loosen our attachment to that, I recognize that this can be challenging. But nevertheless, I think it is something that we need to do if we are to have intrinsic hope in our lives, if we are to be more accepting of the way things are.
Is it the difference between it's not working and it's not working now?
Yeah, it could be. It could be. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think there is, you know, often with our extrinsic hopes, we want something now. We want something in the short term. And you know, when I look at my own extrinsic hopes, if they're long-term extrinsic hopes, then they're really just more in the realm of kind of wishes and desires that I may or may not act on. So extrinsic hopes are often more about wanting something, because we're so caught up in them, we want it. There's an urgency to them. Might be a good way of saying it.
Kate Davies, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. I'd like to spend the rest of our time getting into the six habits of hope. And number one is being present. And does this mean suppressing a desire to be an escapist in today's world?
quite the contrary, actually. I think what I mean by being present is just being aware of what is happening in the present moment. You know, if your mind is anything like mine and your listeners' minds, and I bet they are, during the day I'm often in the past rehashing what happened yesterday or last week or even decades ago, or I'm fantasizing or planning about what might happen in the future. Or I'm running some kind of constant narrative in my mind about my experience. I like this. I don't like that. Why did she say that? Why did he do that? I'm kind of, you know, I'm embellishing, I'm adding something to the experience of being in the present moment. But if we can just slow down a little and be more aware of other people and more aware of the world around us without adding our storylines to it, without adding our storylines, then life kind of opens up. And I think that can be a very hopeful thing, even if our experience is somewhat painful or difficult. It can still make us feel more in touch with life, and I think that that is very hopeful.
Let me line up the full six habits of hope as we head to the break, and we'll talk about the other five when we come back. Number one, being present, we just mentioned, expressing gratitude. Number two, number three, loving the world. Number four, accepting what is. Number five, taking action. And number six, persevering for the long haul. So we have a bit more to talk about with Kate Davies. The book is Intrinsic Hope, Living Courageously in Troubled Times, about how to get away from the day-to-day, short-term gain kind of hope and get into a very long-term kind of thinking that extends really beyond our own lifetimes. We'll get back to talk more with Kate Davies and take phone calls and emails from you if you'd like to join us when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Kate Davies, who has been involved in environmental studies and sustainability for a very long time. She teaches it. She set up the first Environmental Protection Office for the City of Toronto decades ago. Now listed as an associate professor at the University of Washington, senior fellow at the Whidbey Institute, and emeritus faculty at Antioch University. Lots of discussion about the environment at this moment in history, and it can get just plain damn depressing at times, clearly. Kate's book is called Intrinsic Hope, Living Courageously in Troubled Times. You can join the conversation as we talk about what it means to have a level of hope that extends beyond some of our short-term goals and gains. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So we're going through the six habits of hope, being present, number one. And before we leave that one, do you recommend some mindfulness practices, Kate?
Oh, I do, definitely, yes. So, and here I'm not talking about, you know, becoming a hermit or a long-term meditator or anything like that, but just being mindful, you know, during the day, just a couple of times a day, just really dropping into what is it like in the present moment. You know, sometimes I recommend to my students just being mindful of one activity every day. So something that you do like brushing your teeth or taking a shower every day, just really feel what it's like to brush your teeth or take a shower. And that can really slow us down, I think, and over the long term can make us feel better about ourselves and ultimately give us a little bit more hope.
Which takes us to the second of the six habits, expressing gratitude, which I wonder if you see this as something of a lost art in the world.
Oh, I do. I very much do. You know, when I was growing up, it was just automatic to write a thank you note to everyone who gave me a gift, or to give thanks for a meal, a family meal. But we seem to have lost this art of gratitude, and we rarely these days, I think, take time to really give thanks for everything that we have in our lives. And I'm not even just talking about physical things here, but also just things that you might not think of. So that we have the gift of life, that we have, that most of us know where our next meal is coming from, that we have eyes to see and ears to hear and arms to hug each other. Those are gifts, if you can think of them that way. And just being grateful for our lives, that doesn't mean, you know, forgetting about our struggles or problems or what's happening in the world. But just this sense of gratitude can really open things up, I think, and it puts our problems and everything that's wrong with the world, it puts everything in that larger perspective of being able to see both the good and the maybe not so good. So I think expressing gratitude is really important.
And it's here where the term joy appears. I was wondering if that term would appear in the book. So this tells us that intrinsic hope can have some real high points.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. You know, and I think that one of the things about joy is that we can take joy in other people's lives. You know, it's not just about, oh, I've got such good fortune, I'm doing so well, or I've been given such gifts in my life. But it's also recognizing when other people are doing well and appreciating that and having joy for them, having joy in their good qualities, in their achievements and accomplishments, joy in whatever they're doing. And, you know, I think of my son when he was very small. He used to play t-ball, and maybe some of your listeners are familiar with t-ball.
Yes.
And you're right. And you know, when one of the small players, you know, and t-ball's like, what, 3 to 5 year old or something, if somebody hits the ball and scores a run, then everyone cheers. Everyone, you know, all the parents, the coaches, the kids on the other team. It's like everyone takes pleasure in the runner or the hitter's accomplishment. That's what I'm talking about here, is we can take joy in other people's achievements and when they do well. And we don't often think of that in American society because we are so individualistic, as we were talking about a few minutes ago. So really cultivating joy in other people's achievements, I think, can also make us more hopeful.
Which slides rather seamlessly into the next of the 6 Habits of Hope, loving the world, which is a lot about community. I mean, if we're not used to getting ourselves out into the world, how do you recommend us, how do you, when we get started?
Start where you are. You know, I used to have a lot of my students used to say, well, what should I do? Where should I work? What can I do? And I would always say, start where you are. Get to know your community. Get to know your neighbors. Get to know the environment that you live in. And in the book, I actually have a quiz that I use with my students on how well do you know your local environment? How well do you know your neighborhood? And it's a pretty tough quiz, actually. The questions seem pretty basic, but when I first did it, I found out that I didn't know my neighborhood as well as I thought I did. And just doing that gives us a sense of connection with the people and places that we live with, and that can be again a great way to cultivate hope. Just having your neighbors over for coffee, or having a block party, or you know what, a clean-up day in the neighborhood, or a cookout at this time of year. These things are very build community, and they build trust, and they also build a sense of being positive and engaged with each other that I think is very hopeful.
Number 4 of the 6 Habits of Hope is accepting what is, and this includes forgiveness. How far do we extend forgiveness, Kate?
Yeah, so I think it's really important to understand what forgiveness is. So forgiveness cannot be forced. You know, we can be willing to forgive, but we can't will forgiveness. Ultimately, forgiveness is not about saying, yeah, everything's okay and nothing happened, but it's really about understanding where the other person or the other group or whatever, where they came from, and putting yourself in their shoes and trying to understand why they did what they did or why they said what they said. It's not necessarily starting over with a clean slate, as it were, but it is letting go of the kind of resentment about what happened, who said what to whom, and it's about acknowledging what happened, the past, but not somehow holding on to it, and it's something that we can all do. It doesn't have to be dependent on the other person's actions necessarily, or on some kind of retribution. It's really a softening of the heart, an opening of the heart, I think, and it is possible, I think.
So we move on to number five of the six habits of hope, taking action. A little bit of a Hippocratic oath in here. Do no harm is number one. Small steps comes right after that. What kinds of small steps do you recommend us taking to start being hopeful?
Just getting out in nature every day is a great small step. Now, that of course, isn't going to solve the world's problems, but just doing whatever we can, walking as much as possible, not using the car for trips, cutting down on air travel to the extent that's possible, getting to know your neighbors and being connected with other people, composting, recycling, all of these things, whether or not they actually achieve anything, whether or not they actually result in saving the planet is kind of beside the point. As I mentioned earlier, this isn't about the outcomes necessarily, but it is about feeling good about ourselves and feeling good about what we're doing. You know, it's about taking action because we want to live whatever our highest ideals and values are. If our highest ideals are about being kind and trying to leave the Earth a better place than we found it, and about caring for other species, then let's put that into action in whatever we do. Whether or not we actually achieve anything, we can live from our values, and we can do things simply because they are the caring, the ethical, the appropriate thing to do, rather than because we expect that they will achieve particular outcome. So that's really the small steps, and the whole thing about taking action is really important.
So maintain the virtue of what you're doing, even if you think that the impact might be a little less than you had hoped.
Exactly. And virtue is a great word, and it's a word that we don't use very much anymore. It's kind of falling out of fashion, but it's really being a virtuous person. Yes.
Okay, so that takes us to number six of the six habits of hope, persevering for the long haul, which really is about long-term thinking. And at heart, I have to ask, Kate, you've been around a bit. How hard is this for a lot of people?
Oh, I think, I think if we look at perseverance, if we look at it in a big way, it can feel like a big mountain, But if we break it down and we just persevere, day after day, week after week, then it builds up into years and decades. It's just taking it, one day at a time, as the slogan goes, and it's a good one. It's just hanging in to the best of our ability every day and doing whatever we can every day. We don't have to measure our success by whether we achieve anything or not. We measure our success by the strength of our determination, by the strength of our perseverance. And we can learn so much from previous generations who have persevered through very difficult times. In the U.S., I think about the Dust Bowl, for example. In Europe, I think about the Second World War. Previous generations have persevered, and that's what has enabled us to be here today. So can we learn from their perseverance and just keep going ourselves? I think about the builders of medieval cathedrals in Europe. Those cathedrals took hundreds and hundreds of years to build. The people working on them never expected to see the results in their lifetime. That's perseverance, That's just keeping on going.
So in both human works and in the works of nature, we can start things that we won't be around to finish. I mean, you certainly plant an acorn now, but don't expect to be able to climb on that tree before you leave the planet yourself.
Precisely. So we can have intrinsic hope for our children and our grandchildren and for all future generations of life on Earth. It doesn't have to be about what we hope to see anytime soon.
An analogy came to mind, Kate, as I was thinking about how to think of the two types of hope, the intrinsic hope you write about here, which is much more long-term, versus the extrinsic hope, which is based on the next car or cupcake or date. Is extrinsic hope the burner and intrinsic hope the pilot light, as it were?
Yeah, you could say, you could, you know, I hadn't thought of that, but yes, you could see them that way. You know, the problem is, to use your analogy, that we get focused on the pilot light and we don't see the back burner. Now, I would just like to add that I don't want to imply, or your listeners to think, that I'm saying that extrinsic hopes are bad. I really don't. We all have them, and there's nothing wrong with extrinsic hopes. It's just that they come with this shadow side, and when we realize that, then through our own experience, then I think we're more open to what I'm calling intrinsic hope.
Mm-hmm. It's a greater purity of hope, I would venture. I mean, it's a sense where it's not really so much encumbered by things again. You know, it's not tangible and temporal.
It's not tangible and temporal, you know, and I'm not the first person to come up with this idea. There's all kinds of quotations and descriptions of this type of hope out there. The former president of Czechoslovakia, Václav Havel, talks about it when he says that hope is an outlook on life. It's an attitude. It's the dimension of the spirit, he calls it. And there's another quote that I use at the beginning of the book that talks about hope as the creative act, as the creative force, and planting dates, even though we may not be able to eat those dates ourselves. So that's what I'm talking about with intrinsic hope.
I was hoping we'd get Václav Havel in before we left, and we have, in fact, done that. Well done, Kate Davies. The book is called Intrinsic Hope, Living Courageously in Troubled Times. Kate, thank you so much.
Thank you.